This is Molly Hemingway, encouraging you to listen to my favorite podcast, Issues, Etc. Every day you get in-depth interviews with host Todd Wilkin asking expert guests substantive, thought-provoking questions on all of the important news and issues of our day. The expert guests are in culture, law, ethics, philosophy, theology, and apologetics. Expert guests, expansive topics, always extolling Christ. Issues, etc.
I recently heard it compared to the 1974 walkout of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Concordia Seminary faculty. The majority of that faculty walked out. It was a kind of a staged event. They came back, ate lunch, and then some of the students, it seems, made off with some of the books from the library. They ended up at a library of a neighboring seminary. Well, the actions of the rogue Board of Regents at Concordia University, Texas, may just be a more well-planned walkout. This time, they get to take the property with them, too. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us for an update on an attempt by Concordia University, Texas, to reject the governance and oversight of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Tom Halverson. He's an attorney in Montana and author of an essay titled Two Simple Questions About Concordia, Texas, Throwing Off the Bylaws of the LCMS. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you, Pastor Wilkin.
Briefly summarize what we covered last time with you on this issue.
Well, we talked on the last episode about the action in November of 2022 by the majority of the Board of Regents of Concordia University, Texas, by which they claim to make themselves self-governing and self-perpetuating in complete independence from the Concordia University system and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. They took that action by amending the Articles of Incorporation and the bylaws of the university, and then filing their amendments of the articles with the Secretary of State of Texas. So in that other episode, I addressed that action from the perspective of the catechisms and confessions of the Lutheran Church, particularly the 4th, 7th, and 9th commandments, the treatise against the power and primacy of the Pope, and what the name Lutheran means. So under the 4th commandment, the regents are stewards of the synod, owing the duties of stewardship to the synod. And by throwing off those duties and completely denying that there is any stewardship, that under the 4th commandment is a rebellion. Under the 7th and 9th commandments, the property of the university is held for the benefit of the synod. To appropriate the property to other separate use is, morally speaking under those commandments, a theft. And then the president and the provost of the university attempt to justify the action by an analogy between congregations, this university, or any of the universities in the Concordia University system. They say that congregations are independent, so the university should be independent. But there is no analogy in Lutheran theology between congregations and universities, because universities exist only by human arrangement, not by divine command or right like congregations do. So therefore, the regents really must submit to the human arrangement rather than pretend that they are independent like congregations. And then finally, the president and the provost claim that they are preserving Lutheran identity at the university. But the provost, in her doctoral dissertation, gave a definition of the word Lutheran that is fundamentally wrong and is essentially the same as the Papists, Zwinglians, Anabaptists, and the Radical Reformation used in the 16th century as an insult to the Lutherans and to undermine the Lutheran Reformation. So the action and the justifications for it are wrong because they are unauthorized and they're un-Lutheran.
What prompted you to dig into the bylaws of the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod in relationship to Concordia University, Texas? What were you looking for?
Well, the regents took their action by amending the Articles of Incorporation and the bylaws of the university. So to see the nature of their action, I read their amendments. And in the Articles of Incorporation, they made two changes. And it is those two changes that then prompted me to look at the synodical bylaws. First, they deleted what had been Article 2 in the Articles of Incorporation and substituted a new Article 2 that says that they, quote, are not subject to the authority of or governance by the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, end quote. And then second, they deleted Article 5. And to understand the change, we should see what it used to say. It used to say, the business of this corporation shall be conducted and its affairs shall be controlled by a board of trustees to be elected in accordance with the rules and regulations of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. They struck that out and replaced it with the following. The management of the affairs of the corporation is vested in its board of regents in accordance with the bylaws. So if we just kind of pause right there, it's not in accordance with the bylaws of the synod, but in accordance with their own bylaws that they control at the university. And then their amendment goes on, all determinations regarding the university's alignment with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, including but not limited to the university's subscription and adherence to the confession of the LCMS, as currently outlined in Article 2 of the LCMS Constitution, and qualifications for board members and the presidency, will be subject to and determined by the sole and exclusive direction of the Board of Regents. So from that language of changing the articles, you see five areas of change. They attempt to rebel against all authority and governance by the Synod, attempt to abolish fidelity to the Synod's doctrine and confession of faith, attempt to replace stewardship to the Synod with something they call alignment with the Synod, which is just a mushy term that as you read on through the rest of it, you find means just whatever the regents feel like confessing, subject to evolution as time goes on. Attempt to abolish the Synod's qualifications for regents. Attempts to abolish the Synod's qualification for the president of the university. So there's a lot going on there, but basically it prompts just two simple questions. Do the synodical bylaws show that Concordia, Texas is independent like their amendment declares, or that the Board of Regents is a steward of the Synod, owing the duties of stewardship to the Synod? And secondly, if they are stewards, but declare that they do not want to be stewards, why not? Why might the regents not want to be stewards in the ways provided by the synodical bylaws? So to understand their action, I wanted to see what the bylaws say that they are throwing off. They're throwing something off. I wanted to see what it was they were throwing off.
Without getting into the weeds on the pertinent bylaws, what do the synodical bylaws say about the relationship of stewardship of the regents at Concordia University, Texas to Synod?
Well, the bylaws provide an abundance, really an overabundance. In one respect, the case is so good that it's almost hard to make because there's so much material you can bring to bear out of the bylaws that it's hard for even the most interested people to sit through it all. But, and that happens sometimes when you have such a great case. But just generally, there are quite a few places that talk about the stewardship relationship. There's one that says that Concordia, Texas and its regents are stewards. The bylaws call the regents agents, calls them fiduciaries, calls them custodians of the LCMS, and talks about the assignment of the mission by the synod to the university. It talks about Concordia, Texas and its regents saying that they are subject to the doctrine, constitution, bylaws, purposes, mission, policies, procedures, standards, and guidelines of the Synod. That's just general summary type talk before you even get into detail about it. That the regents shall conform the charter, articles, and bylaws of the university to those of the Synod. And that's one that they very directly offended with these amendments. They didn't have any authorization to do that. They're supposed to conform to the synodical ones. And if they're going to make amendments, they're supposed to submit them for review to see if they do conform. They didn't do that either. The election and appointment of regents is controlled by the synodical bylaws. That's kind of some long provisions, but just generally to know that the synodical bylaws control that shows you that there is a stewardship there. And the election of a president of a university the same way. So there's no shortage of bylaws that are just kind of no-brainers. Here's a few. I'm going to quote just some short excerpts from about a half dozen or so. The regents, quote, shall operate and manage the synod as the institution, as the agent of the synod. The regent shall operate and manage the institution, quote, carefully exercising its fiduciary duties to the synod. The regents shall conform the charter, articles of incorporation, and bylaws of the university to those of the synod. The regents shall govern a university subject to the policies set by the synod and the Concordia University system. The regents shall develop detailed policies and procedures to confess Jesus Christ, quote, in full accord with the doctrinal position of the LCMS in Constitution Article 2. And then the last example is, quote, the synod, which in which ownership of the institution is primarily vested and which exercises its ownership through the board of directors as custodians of the synod's property, with the board of regents as the local governing body. So before you get into nuts and bolts about how to elect a president or how regents are elected or what all these policies and procedures are, just at a high summary level, it says over and over and over in so many different ways that all of these things are subject to the Synod and the Concordia University system.
Tom Halverson is our guest. He's an attorney in Montana and author of an essay titled Two Simple Questions About Concordia, Texas, Throwing Off the Bylaws of the LCMS. We're getting an update on that situation, and we'll turn to the relationship between the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and individual universities in their Concordia University system.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we continue our adventures in Acts with Peter welcomes Cornelius' delegation. Peter arrives in Caesarea, Gentiles hear the gospel, the Gentiles Pentecost, and Peter's report to the church. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
Psalm 144:1. Blessed be the Lord my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle. Those serving in the armed forces want LCMS chaplains. We need courageous pastors to bring the gospel and sacraments to those protecting our nation, along with wise counsel and the peace found only in Christ Jesus. If you are between the age of 26 and 43 and have a heart for ministry in the armed forces, call 314-996-1337 or email lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Confessional Lutherans, we've got your back. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Many educational institutions are governed by the whims of culture and are increasingly hostile to the Word of God. In contrast, Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, provides classical Lutheran education rooted in God's Word for students preschool through grade 12. Simply put, we equip students to stand firm in the faith through solid education focused on wisdom and virtue. We offer in-person instruction as well as live online classes for remote learning. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
Are you attending the LCMS National Convention? Ad Crucem is partnering with Confessional Lutheran Fellowship of Facebook to help members of CLF identify each other at the convention. If you're a member of CLF, pop on over to our booth to get your free CLF sticker and to see all our wonderful Christ-focused products. Visit adcrucem.com or booth 222 at the LCMS convention.
We're getting an update on an attempt by Concordia University, Texas, to reject the governance and oversight of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Tom Halverson, attorney in Montana, is our guest. Tom, how do the synodical bylaws describe the relationship between the Concordia University system and the individual universities.
The synodical bylaws say that the board of directors of the Concordia University system has authority, and that's the word they use, has authority with respect to the synod's colleges and universities. It has the overall responsibility to provide for the education that is given at the universities. It facilitates prior approval for theology appointments to the faculties, and it coordinates the activities of the colleges and universities as a unified system so that they don't have unnecessary duplications or work at cross purposes to each other. And those are sort of the general introductory statements. And after that come provisions that bring us sort of to a mid-level. But for your listeners, we're just looking at these from the point of view of what does this say about whether the regents are independent or are stewards? And what do these show you that the regents are attempting to avoid by throwing off these bylaws? So we don't really need to try to absorb all these like we were going to run the Concordia University system. We're just looking at it as members of our congregations and asking, well, what's going on? Why would they not want to be under these bylaws? So here are some examples about CUS, the Concordia University system, and the universities. The board of CUS assists the president of the synod in monitoring and promoting the ongoing faithfulness of the universities to Article 2 of the Constitution of the Synod, which is where the statement of the confession of the faith of the synod is made. So that's something they would be throwing off. They don't want to be monitored by the board or by the president with regard to their faithfulness to the doctrine of the synod. The board of CUS adopts standards for ensuring curricular fidelity to the doctrine and practice of the synod and monitor compliance with the standards. So that's something. They don't want to have the curriculum be monitored for the sake of fidelity to our doctrines. The board of CUS adopts policies and ensures that the regents and the campus administrators are actively working to preserve their Lutheran identity, which is an objective of Constitution Article 3 of the Missouri Synod, and maintaining accountability of the universities to the system-wide board. So that's something they're throwing off. The CUS board maintains a list of subject matters that each university must address in its policies and procedures. And it goes into things like faculty appointments, employment contracts, contract renewal, contract termination, faculty organization, sabbaticals, dispute resolution. And we don't need to, as lay people, have all that list in our head. But what it shows is that the bylaws provide that these things are to be supervised by the Concordia University system and not each university just flying off on its own as an independent matter as if there were no synod. The CUS maintains a model operating procedure manual at which it produces in consultation with the Commission on Constitutional Matters for handling faculty complaints and dispute resolution by the regents. There's a real in-depth section in bylaw 3664 that I'm not going to go into, that just the fact that it has all kinds of detail is telling you that the regents are not independent as they have declared, but are subject to the bylaws of the synod. And then a really significant one that I'll finish with under this heading is the fact that members of the synod remain under ecclesiastical supervision and discipline even for their actions in connection with a position they may hold at one of the universities. Now, to the lay people, this takes just a little bit of explanation. When you hear the phrase member of synod, if you're a lay person who's a member of an LCMS congregation, you probably assume that you're a member of the synod. And in a just a vernacular way, that's perfectly a fine understanding. But in the bylaws, a member of the synod is either a congregation that has been admitted into the synod, or it's an ordained pastor on the roster of the Office of Public Ministry. Those are members of the synod, and actually the lay members of congregations are not. So what this is talking about here is the discipline of pastors. If a pastor becomes a regent at a university, or if a pastor is part of the administration, or if the pastor is a faculty member, and they violate an obligation of pastors in the synod, The fact that they did it at the university doesn't give them King's X or a big immunity from still being subject to the ecclesiastical supervision and discipline as a pastor for having violated a duty of a pastor. And that really shows that the university is not independent of the synod and is, and quite the opposite, is subject to the discipline of the synod.
The amendment to the Concordia University Texas Articles of Incorporation oddly declares that its Board of Regents would both govern without any authority or governance by the Synod, and that the regents themselves would determine the qualifications for being a regent, kind of self-referential, foxes guarding the henhouse. What do the synodical bylaws say about that?
Well, just totally the opposite. The composition of the Board of Regents is set by the synodical bylaws, not by the university's own governing instruments. The governing instruments can say some things reflective of what's in the synodical bylaws, but we already covered that whatever they do say has to conform to the synod's constitution and bylaws. And if they're going to amend it, they're supposed to ask for permission to, and have it reviewed to see if the amendment they're proposing does conform. So in the synod's bylaws, the Board of Regents cannot select its own members or self-perpetuating, nor can they set their own qualifications. And in fact, the synod bylaws, besides setting up the qualifications, even have a kind of a stringent procedure to verify that candidates have the qualifications. So when somebody is nominated, then the secretary of the synod and some others in the synod under the bylaws check into the facts to see if they really possess the qualifications. So that's not a sign of independence. That's a sign of stewardship. And there are very important reasons for this control over the composition of the Board of Regents. Under the heading of the Concordia University system, we already saw that CUS has the superintendence of the universities. And then when you come in the bylaws to the next area, the heading about the regents for the universities, as if it wasn't enough to say it once, then they say it again, that the regents govern a university subject to the policy set by the Synod and the CUS, that a primary duty of a regent is to fulfill the mission of the university within the assignment given to the university by the Synod, that they are supposed to become familiar with and develop an understanding of policy, standards, and guidelines of the Synod and the Board of Directors of the CUS. And in the case of Texas, I believe that has not been done. And the failure of in regard to their action in November, it could be somewhat attributed to the fact that when a regent comes onto the Board of Regents, they don't do this. They don't familiarize themselves with what institution have I become a regent of. I have become a regent of a Lutheran university of a particular synod, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, which is the master, and the university and the regents are the steward. So therefore, my mission is to carry out what the synod assigned as the mission of this university. I don't see how that could possibly be done and have the kind of result we've seen. The regents are supposed to develop detailed policies and procedures for the governance of the university that will give specific attention to ways to confess Jesus Christ, both in the life of the campus and in the curriculum, quote, in full accord with the doctrinal position of the LCMS in Constitution Article Number 2. And here's one that I also wonder if this is going on. There's a bylaw that says the regents shall develop specific ways to ensure, quote, that all faculty receive appropriate formal ongoing training in the doctrines of Holy Scripture as rightly taught in the Lutheran confessions as they relate to their academic disciplines, consistent with the Concordia University System Lutheran Identity Statement. A person, I think, could be forgiven for wondering if that happens at the university. And then finally, the Synod Board of Directors has the property responsibilities over the property of the universities of the Synod, and the regents are required by the bylaws to acquire, manage, use, and preserve, improve, and dispose of the property within the guidelines set by the board of directors of the Concordia University System. So they don't have independence with regard to the property. They are stewards and they are the local managers on behalf of the Synod.
That amended Articles of Incorporation also say that the regents are going to determine the qualifications for the president of the university. How does that run afoul of the synodical bylaws?
We can break that down into two parts as far as the selection of the president. One is the fact that the presidents have a term. They are not for an indefinite time or for lifetime. So what happens when the term runs out is one thing. And then the other is if there's a vacancy, let's say that a president retires or is incapacitated or passes away, then you have a vacancy. So those are the two instances where the qualifications and who has the authority to select a new president come into play. On the term and renewal of term part, each president of each of the universities serves a five-year term. They don't just serve forever or indefinitely. They can have these terms renewed, but they're renewed 5 years at a time. No president who was on the faculty and might have reached tenure with the faculty can transfer this tenure over to his service as the president. So you're still subject to the five-year term and to the standards that come into play when the renewal of the term comes up at the end of the 5 years, and they can't use tenure concepts in the position of the president. When that term comes up, then there is a review and an evaluation of the president's effectiveness in the current term, and the regents then can confer another five-year term if that review is positive. They are required, however, that is to say the regents are, to consult the president of the synod and the chairman of the board of directors of the Concordia University System before renewing the term of a president. So there, that again shows that this isn't an independent university, but is one that is a steward of the synod. Now, in case of a vacancy, the bylaws had some provisions that surprised me, and I think might be a surprise to some of the regents in Texas, that first of all, if there is a vacancy, or you can see that there's about to be a vacancy, the regents have the duty to inform the board of directors of the Concordia University System of that fact, the president of the synod, and an official periodical of the synod, such as the reporter, because it's the synod school, and all these people will need to know that there's a vacancy in the presidency. Then the regents can appoint someone as an interim president who may only be called an interim president. And that interim presidency may only go on for 18 months unless you get some permission from the synodical president to extend that period. The person appointed as an interim president is not qualified to become the permanent president without the consent of the president of the synod. And as far as seeking nominations to fill the vacancy, the regents don't even have the permission to publicize that they are seeking nominations until they firstly contact the board of directors of the Concordia University System and ask for the authorization to publish a request for nominations to the position. When they request that, then the board of directors of the Concordia University System schedules a transition review of the campus. The review is to provide a report on the state of the campus for use by the search committee, the regents, and the candidates. And the search committee shall be formed, and all its members must be members of LCMS congregations. And then still before publishing a call for nominations, the president of the Concordia University System is required to convene an in-person conference involving the Board of Regents, the search committee, and the prior approval panel, which we're going to see here in just a second, to discuss the qualifications that will be sought and the search criteria. So then, after all that, the request for nomination may be submitted to the parties who are authorized to nominate, and not just anybody is authorized to nominate. So when we talk about publication of the request for nominations, what we mean is publishing it to people who are authorized to make a nomination, not to just everybody in the world. And then there is a Concordia University System prior approval panel. The composition of that panel is controlled by the bylaws. And when the regents want to be able to have certain candidates considered as the possible new president, they have to submit that name and also other information that they got from and about the candidate to the prior approval panel, who then checks things out. And they then communicate back to the Board of Regents who they have given prior approval to. And the regents may only elect a president from a slate that they did submit to the prior approval panel and that received the approval of the prior approval panel. So that's quite a bit of machinery, quite a bit of processes, more than I was expecting to see. And I think if you're the president of the university or the regents, and you don't want to be subject to this, that kind of pulls the curtain back on the intentions. I don't think it takes anybody too bright to figure out why they would want to get rid of being subject to bylaws like that. And I want to give you just three reasons why it's so important to the Synod to have this. Why do they have all this machinery? Well, there's some very good reasons for it. Because the president of a university in this system isn't simply a business manager. The bylaws say that the president, quote, shall serve as the spiritual head of the institution, end quote. That's a lot more responsibility than probably a lot of people think exists in a presidency. And when that kind of responsibility is there, you can see where the Synod would want to be careful about who is appointed to that kind of a position. The president shall direct the institution and all its departments pursuant to the rules and regulations of the Synod, its board, and its agencies. But if it's been selected on an independent self-perpetuating basis, such as they have declared now, they wouldn't even know what any of this stuff is or care about it. We couldn't be expected to follow any of it. And many of the core duties of the president, rather than being left to definition in the governing documents of the university, are defined by the Synod in convention in the synodical bylaws. So that was quite a bit on the presidency, and it kind of shows you what the idea would be behind wanting to throw off these requirements at Concordia, Texas.
Now that you've gone through the synodical bylaws about the universities of the Synod, what conclusions have you drawn about the action of the majority of the regents there at Concordia University, Texas, to separate from Synod?
Well, the most general conclusion is just that, stepping back from all the details and just looking at the volume and size of all these bylaws, the scale of what they cover as far as breadth and width and height and depth, and some are major matters and some are more small nuts and bolts matters, but it all adds up to just a mountain of bylaws of the that the Synod is the master, the regents are the stewards. And for the regents to have thought they could pole vault over this whole mountain, it's like trying to pole vault a mountain with a toothpick. I mean, it just made it so stark and so obvious that it's hard to account for how somebody that is running a university, after all, where they what their mission is to educate other people. They're the ones that know what people should know, and they're going to run education. And a lot of these people have doctoral degrees and so on. For them to have looked at these bylaws and thought that that meant that they could be independent, that's just mind-boggling. It's very hard to explain, and I'm trying to be temperate in my choice of where you can see me kind of hesitating. I don't want to give a characterization to it, but it's just a marvel. It'll make you go cross-eyed when you look at it. These bylaws provide an overabundance of evidence that Concordia, Texas and its regents are stewards, agents, fiduciaries, and custodians of the Synod, and they are on assignment, not that they self-chose, but that was given to them and assigned to them by the Synod, that their regents are subject to the doctrine, the Constitution, the bylaws, purposes, missions, policies, procedures, standards, guidelines of the Synod, that they are supposed to conform their charter, articles, incorporation, and bylaws of the university to those of the synod, that the election and appointment of regents is controlled not by the school or by the regents, but by the synod and its bylaws, and the president the same way. So the regents' separation from the synod, an amendment of the articles and bylaws, are without authority, and the self-perpetuating self-appointment of regents creates an imposter board of regents. You've used the word rogue, and I talked last time about how their actions are actually beyond rogue, because they don't just go off on a couple of things, that it's a rogue mission while generally submitting to stewardship, but have instead denied stewardship altogether, which is beyond rogue. That was under the commandments, the fourth commandment, the sixth, and the ninth. Now looking at it under the bylaws, this is a different aspect. Looking at it under the bylaws, it makes that board of regents an imposter board. And the question will arise after the synodical convention here in a few weeks, when the convention elects legitimate regents. And then the new term of regency starts, and there's a question of seating people in the seats of the regents at the table. And who's going to be seated? I can anticipate a conflict over that. And that's going to be one of the interesting episodes or chapters in this saga.
Tom Halverson is an attorney in Montana. He's author of an essay titled Two Simple Questions About Concordia, Texas Throwing Off the Bylaws of the LCMS. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Tom, thank you very much.
Thank you, Pastor Wilkin.
Coming up next, we'll replay an interview on faith and perseverance in the early Soviet Union with Dr. Matthew Heise, author of the book The Gates of Hell. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.